No more pencils. No more books. No more teachers. Period. That's what my guest, Aria Willow, thinks. Specifically about teachers operating in the old paradigm, when there's a different approach to education, a conscious approach to education, that would have our kids succeeding in ways you've never thought possible before. Want to know how she's making a difference? You're going to find out coming up on Open Loops. Your unconscious mind is now tuned in to its favorite late night talk show for the shamelessly fringe. It's Open Loops with Greg Bornstein. Conversations that bend. Hello, everybody. It's Greg Bornstein here. What's going on, loopers? Bendy brainiacs. Yes, you're a trance junkie. You're an intellectual escapist. You're here to trip up your mind over and over again, and I am here to facilitate that tripping. My name is Greg. Like I said, I'm a cultural hypnotist, I'm a consciousness disruptor, and I am here to challenge your existing belief systems by sharing radically unique ideas designed to stimulate your unconscious mind so you can step into the highest version of yourself. This show, we cover it all. Conspiracies, spirituality, the mystical, the magical, the hypnotic, the esoteric, the metaphysical, the biggest questions of them all, including who and what we really are. Now, today's episode in particular, I thought we were going to talk quantum physics. I've been talking to a lot of people about quantum physics recently. There's an overabundance of talk about quantum in the spiritual community, perhaps because the way it works is very similar to a lot of spiritual principles. And I had Aria Willow booked, and we were going to talk about quantum and all this stuff, but then I looked at her bio, and I saw that she was a conscious education coach working with homeschooled children and their parents. And I just thought to myself, okay, you know what? Let's talk about education, because I remember when I was in middle school, I wanted to write a letter to the principal, and perhaps this was just me trying to get out of home. It was 100% me trying to get out of doing homework. But I remember I wanted to write something because even back then, I had a sense that the way education worked was wrong. Learning things, spitting them back out, wasting hours, doing what teachers sometimes described as busy work. The teachers were telling us they knew when something was busy work. The system was broken, even when I was in public schools. And I still think it is today. I've talked about this. I've talked about this on Facebook. I've talked about this in other episodes, just that I think what we're taught, the way we've been taught we should be taught, the reasons behind why we're taught the way we're taught, totally needs to be upended, broken, dismantled, shattered. Pink Floyd was right. The wall. Tear down this wall, as Reagan said, or something. I don't know, I wasn't paying attention in school because I was in school, public school. Okay, look, I had a lot of good times in public school. I won't lie. Met a lot of good teachers, the best of that system. But that doesn't mean just because you had good teachers and you had a quote-unquote good education, that was the best education for you and for society. My guest, Aria Willow, NLP background, coaching, spirituality, lots of cool things. Also, she's kind of off the grid, which is awesome that she's... I mean, I guess she has to be because she's building a business and coaching and working with parents and has to be out there at some level, but she's a little, you know, MIA, which I like too. Aria Willow has a different way of working with children, working with parents, that is much more in line with the humanity of the kids, as well as the emotional needs of all of us, especially parents, and especially the way parents relate to kids. It's really, see, higher consciousness is not just about quantum physics and spirituality. It's simply about emotional intelligence. The simplest things, the things that get worked on later in therapy, and then you hire coaches later in life to fix inside of you. It starts early. I'm so excited to share this back to unschool edition of Open Loops with you all. And if you think somebody else needs to hear this conversation, because we know there are people out there that need to, please make sure to share this podcast with your friends, family, your teachers, but make sure you do it in a nice way. Or if you do it, write a handwritten thing to them, maybe in one of those blue books in red ink, so that they get a taste of the negativity that you felt burned in your soul from. Okay, look, now I love teachers. I do love teachers. Sorry, I love them. No, but yeah, make sure you share this with people. And if you like Open Loops in this podcast at all, please make sure to follow it on Apple Podcasts and rate the show 5 stars. Leave a review. Put some words in there. Definitely helps get these conversations out there. Love this episode. Just loved the different perspective. It was nice to have something else besides ghosts and aliens that was still highly spiritual and consciousness expanding. So that said, I got some good ghost and alien episodes, so make sure you follow the podcast because you're not going to want to miss some of the stuff I have dropping soon for you all. Anyways, yes, here she is, Aria Willow. All right, today on Open Loops, we have Aria Willow, a conscious education coach. We're going to delve into a lot of Aria's background, a lot of good stuff going on here. Applied behavior analysis, hypnosis, NLP, all stuff we talk about on this show, and quantum. Quantum's part of this too. Very curious how the quantum intersects with education, especially with kids. We're going to dig into it. Aria, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yes, yes. You know, I am so curious about this. Having had a background in different healing modalities, and I know you do a lot of transformational work and change work, to land on working with kids and specifically in education, did you imagine that that's where you were going to focus? And if not, how did you get there?
So actually a long time ago, before I started looking into like transformational and conscious coaching, I've actually been doing that with parents because I started working with kids. When I graduated college and I had my bachelor's, I went into the field of applied behavior analysis, and I learned so much about working with kids, specifically kids diagnosed with autism, also kids who are comorbid with things like Down syndrome, behavior disorders, learning disorders, dyslexia, a lot already and supporting their parents with understanding that. But there was this gap in the literature and the curriculum that didn't really account for things like placebo effect and observation bias. And it was sort of they were just sort of things that you accounted for in your research. They weren't really things that were considered, like, well, why is that happening? And so I sort of saw a disconnect in the way that the kids were learning and the progress that they were making with the methods I was using. So I went and got my master's in behavior analysis and just sort of dove into that further. And that's what led me more towards consciousness work. I was practicing yoga and raised all of these different questions inside me about where my personal life was going. And so at the intersection of yoga and raising my consciousness, as well as learning the piece that was missing in how these kids were learning, I ended up in conscious education, doing transformation work with parents so that they can be the best model for their kids, because they are around their kids most often and they're raising the future generation. So if you're going to change a planet, you got to start with the parents raising the kids.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, what's interesting is that I always thought, to me, early on, that some of the most engaging aspects of specifically hypnosis and neuro-linguistic programming are the initial goals, which were to model people that were excellent in what they were doing. And I remember reading a lot on this. I went deep dived into accelerated learning and how people could use their subconscious to bring material that they were learning to embody it, to become deep inside of them and not just lose information after they've read a chapter of a book, for instance. But then also part of the original goals of it were to look at kids who were natural learners and figure out, okay, what is it that they're doing differently? How do they think about information differently? And of course, that's building off of the Howard Gardner stuff and the different intelligences kids have and stuff like that. I know that there is a gap when it comes to what a lot of people that might even be considered, less so these days, but might even be considered on the fringes of mainstream psychology are saying, neuro-linguistic programming, hypnotists, for instance, as the two, I suppose, that have broken down what it takes to get this information and actually really be a learner, which we all naturally do. And then what the intellectuals say, what the academics say about the different types of learning. What do you think that gap was?
So I feel like the gap that we have in like the intellectual side versus those people who are taking this more creative approach to science, I think, is the fact that there's creativity that's being ignored in the intellectual community in general, because we forget that in order for us to have thoughts, we have to create them from the information that we get. So connecting the mind and body so that your body is capable of pulling whatever information you need in that moment from all that bank of words and thoughts and experiences that you have in your life, using that information creatively, is something that we do. But when you step into intellectualism, sometimes we forget that there's this entire component to thought that we really haven't grasped other than through our emotions. So the emotions being the seat of the unconscious, being that way in to understand, oh, this is touching something deep inside. That emotional component is where we create stories about our life. It's where we create art that allows us to process those emotions. So I feel like having that disconnect between left and right brain and understanding how our bodies are the true vessel for that connection of mind and body. Because our brain is a part of our body. And it's often thought of as the seat of the mind, but really your body, your entire body, each cell has its own individual intelligence. And they all work together with the brain to process information, right? So I think that having that disconnect in the body, between the body, brain, mind, That understanding is a lot of what I work on with my kids, is understanding, well, what's going on in your body? What is it that you're feeling that you need right now? And how do you socially feel okay with expressing that, right? So you're not lashing out because you feel like it's not okay for you to say, my body is wanting me to scream or shout or throw something, right? Yeah. Instead, we just hold it down until we do it. And then we get punished for it until we hold it down further and further. And so kids are being taught this, and they're not even really knowing that they're being taught this. They're just watching it happen in adults and then doing it themselves. And so they're not accessing so much information that's in their brain because they haven't processed the emotions that are coming up when they try to think about something.
Right, right. Here's my curiosity. Do you think they get it earlier on? I mean, how young can you go? Because I keep hearing things about kids coming into this world. I mean, you hear it, you certainly hear it in the communities of people that talk about extraterrestrials all the time. You hear about star seeds, you hear about indigo children, you hear about kids that have a much more, they even come into the world with a greater empathy, a sense of mind-body connection. I mean, when you're working with parents, and then when you're working with kids, I'm curious, do you think they understand the mind-body connection at a much earlier age than we might give them credit for?
Well, I think understand is kind of a almost a misnomer there. I think that understanding comes with merging that mind-body connection. And when children come into this world, I mean, we all start off not being able to speak, right? We have to learn that skill. That's a type of intelligence. There's an innate body intelligence, though, that comes in. And the more that you're in life and you practice that connection, the more that you get that information downloaded to you. So as far as like star seeds and indigo children, it's the premise behind them is that we are beings of light, which is something that is supported in quantum physics. So if you merge those two concepts, but you follow the science behind how that pattern has happened, you're more likely to discover, okay, why are people saying my kid's a star seed, my kid's an indigo child, they're from, you know, another planet or from some other realm or dimension, right? And it's because in quantum physics, we are all made of light. And when you think back to the beginnings of time, we're all made from the same basic elements, right? And so when your body, which is made of those basic elements, as the vibration of the planet resonates higher and higher frequencies, we start to get more and more access to that information in our bodies. And then we have more and more generations who have access to that information more readily. As far as the age, current science puts, and quantum physics, as far as my recent research, puts 0 to 7 years old as the like imprinting stage. Yes. When kids are not, they're taking in information, they're not practicing it yet. They're trying and saying, okay, I've learned this thing or I've seen this thing, I'm going to reflect it back and take that in, right? But they'll start to act out more and say and ask those questions when they're about seven-ish, sometimes sooner. And that's where you have, as you have a good and supportive childhood, you can access those memories easier, right? Because you're already really, really open to and receptive to all of that. And the reason we're shut off from all this information is because we haven't learned how to manage the systems of our life on this planet so that we can live fully balanced lives with one another. So like the disconnection from other people keeps us from having access to all the information.
So the question is, I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm just curious now, the difference between 0 to 7, your work, versus somebody that you catch 8 and after. I mean, you must be doing different kinds of work at that point.
Yeah.
Just because, yeah, one is, hey, let's not stop the openness and the curiosity. Let's keep it going. Versus once you hit 8, it's okay. Yeah, no, there's now some stuff I got to clear in there. Is that what you find?
So it is a little different. Yeah. So kids before 7, it's a little bit easier to model those things and to give corrective behavior, where you're not going to get as like super triggered or overwhelmed, because they're less likely to repeat those behaviors in future, right? They're in that place where they're like, they're going to take it in more readily. And the sooner you start with that and you have consistency in those patterns, the easier it is for your kid to not, like, when they get to 8, start asking questions of like, hey, I've learned all these patterns. I've learned how to be compliant and to listen to you. And I go to school and I get my backpack and I eat my lunch and I come home and I give you my grades or whatever.
And then at like 8, they start to go, okay, well, how is this serving me? Ultimately, I feel like there's this thing that I'm wanting that I'm not getting, but they don't know what that is. And at that point, the parents are now, okay, they're lashing out and I'm not sure why. They have to start to notice the nuanced details of, okay, specifically this moment when my kid's emotions got out of hand or my emotions got out of hand. What was happening right before? What happened right after? Right. And then you can draw a hypothesis. And this is where you have to take that creative space to draw a hypothesis. Okay, I think this might be happening. Okay. And you move into a process and see, okay, what can I do differently that might yield a different result? And it's based on your experience, right? Your own personal experience to model that for the kid. And so you try this new thing and you work with them and you talk with them. And so we work on communication and we work on getting more like openness from the kid. There's more like asking and more, hey, what are you after? What is it that you're wanting? And they may or may not tell you straight up, but you use that information to support them from where they're at so that they can grow into what it is that their body's intelligence truly wants to do. Right. Yeah. We all need structures for that creativity. So the parent is learning how to give them structures without impeding their creativity.
I was going to say, is there ever a parent that says, look, Aria, I brought a baby into this world. I know what I was like for my mom. I know what she was like to her mom. I work with me. Let's nail these first 8 years so that I do not have to deal with the teenage rebellion. They're not going to question things. I want them to be open. I want them to be resourceful. I want them to understand their emotions. I don't want to deal with the crap. Has anybody ever come to you? And what would you say to that person?
Yeah. So, I've had moms who've come when I'll get a lot of them moms who are of the teenagers and they're already over that. And they're like, I wish I'd done all this stuff before. I just want to finish it and stop this thing now.
Yeah.
And a lot of what we come to is like the past has already happened. And the things that have happened in the past are going to lead forward to the future. And regardless of whether your child is zero, whether you just had your kid, that child was birthed inside of you for 9 months. And before that, like when you're born, when that mother was born, she had that child inside of her, the seed of that. And so everything in her life and everything from her past lives, they all affect all of those things. So when you have those younger kids, we work so much on being self-aware. And being aware of like, okay, how am I showing up? How am I modeling, you know, the type of person that I want my kid to see in the world, right? And the type of behaviors that I think are most beneficial for me. And then when you get resistance from them, you can see truth more clearly. You can say, okay, maybe what I thought was wrong, or maybe what I thought was right is actually wrong, because kids will bring up questions like that. And the more that you allow yourself to ponder those, the more you can guide them, you know, until they get to that adult age. And then they already have ways to answer those questions or ways to come to you and work together to answer those questions or to be resourceful in finding solutions to all of their problems.
Yeah, it sounds like a great solution out there. I mean, I wonder, I know you've done a lot of work for homeschooling moms. Could you reform the public schools, you think?
Shoot, that's kind of the ultimate goal, is to change the way that our society views education, because the public school system is a product of our government system, and the government system is a product of the people, right? So ultimately, people are collectively deciding what we are submitting ourselves to, and as we change our the way that government forms and the way that we think of education and the way that we value learning and understand what it does for us on a personal level and not just an intellectual level, the more that our education systems will start to include more conscious learning, so that kids can go into history class and not just learn facts about history, but understand why history is important to understanding who we are as a people and how to respect one another.
I was going to ask you about history next.
Oh, right.
I really want to know about that, because yeah, I definitely sat through, I mean, I was tortured so much in history. I went through AP US history and world history, and I always, I mean, in retrospect, it's interesting now, and certainly looking at alternative history makes it a lot more interesting. I wish I knew about, you know, oh, this is the one thing version that they told you of what happened, but look at what really happened. I mean, that would have made it more interesting, but at least back then, it felt to me like the most just straight up pay attention, memorize these facts, and spit them back out of all the classes. At least math had a bit of a cognitive, you know, or they argued that you think about things this way, and then it's going to affect how you think about things in your life, which is still debatable, but history in general felt to me like the most abuse in terms of being subjecting myself to a an old school educational system. How would you redo it? I mean, if you were to go through U.S. history and make it more conscious and have you, rather than learning and spitting out facts, what would be the ARIA conscious education approach to learning that?
So for my younger kids, my like 7 to 9 year olds, we dive into like personal history, and we look at like, what's your, you know, what has your routines been like at home? What's your family life like? What kinds of cultural traditions does your family bring to your life? And what is the history of those traditions? Where did those come from? And then you can dive back into, and you start with something that's relatable, something that's tangible, something a kid already knows about, right? They already have their family tradition of going to this particular beach on 4th of July. Why? Yes. Diving into that, talking to their parents about it, and understanding the root of why we do what we do on a day-to-day basis connects you to the history of your people and to the land that you're living on, so that it's your history becomes a tangible part of your daily life. And you can start to see like, well, why do I do this thing? And why did I do that thing in my past? And you can start to look and say like, oh, wow, this is a huge part of my cultural history, right? Like, shoot, here's the smallest example, but potatoes. Why do I love potatoes so much? Because I'm Irish. I mean, right. I don't know if that's true, but it's a funny one, and it's entirely possible, right? But there's a lot of things like that that actually do very directly tie into the history of who we are on a day-to-day basis. So we dive into that, and then you can get into, because you get kids will ask you a million and one questions. You don't need to give them facts. You give them a piece of something interesting about their life, and they'll ask you a million and one questions, and we go back and we say, okay, well, what interested you about that? So a lot of homeschooling is actually really closely tied to unschooling.
Yes.
Where kids are not, they're working within a structure, but it's not like, okay, we're going to spend 3 months learning US history, then we're going to spend 3 months learning European history. And then, you know, it's not structured that way. It's like, okay, what do you guys want to learn and explore? And maybe we start with like a theme, or we'll do a project that's related to some kind of culture, and it would be something relatable directly to that child and that child's family.
Now, do kids like this form of schooling? Do you think they do? Yeah, because that's the other thing I was going to say. It's conscious education, becoming aware of your awareness and then becoming aware of the way you ask questions. It's certainly more interesting to me than this perception of, oh, I have to go to school. I mean, what are the kinds of things that you hear from these kids as they relate to school that might be different than this mainstream narrative of, oh, God, school's terrible?
Well, a lot of the kids that I've worked with have been shifting into homeschool, right? So with all of the things going on with COVID, all the kids were learning online and they were doing Zoom classes. Their parents started noticing all these gaps in their learning. And so I would start working one-on-one with those kids, and they were just over it. They were not interested in being online, but they were interested in meeting people who are new. And they wanted to be friends. Right? A lot of these kids who are online really want to have friends. They want to have community. They want to have people who they can practice their skills with and get to know and expand their learning and growth from, right? So they learn with one another, and they're really, really excited to be in these groups. The biggest thing that I've noticed is that when we try to go one-on-one for things like math, A lot of the kids who've been in the school system, the public school system, are not interested, just not interested. And that's why I started doing behavioral support as like the main focus, behavioral and emotional support, and linking the two to understand, why is this kid not wanting to do math? Why are so many kids not wanting to do math? And it's because there's this piece of math that's not really considered. And it's the internal addition, right? So when you go from addition to multiplication and you have to memorize, this is that rote memorization that you're talking about with history. Yeah. When you get to that part in math, that's when kids stumble, because that's when you have to have mental and behavioral flexibility to add different numbers that are ones above the other, ones below the other. Does it more than 10? Is it less than 10? Are you carrying ones? It gets complicated really quickly. So I started breaking that down for these kids by starting with, like, you know, their common interests. So one of the kids that I worked with, they did Minecraft. And we're just talking about numbers in Minecraft. And he didn't even want to talk about math at all. It took me like 2 months to talk about math. Right? But once we did, skyrocketed. This kid was brilliant. He was already past what they were trying to teach him, but he didn't have this like foundational skill of how to like add all these numbers in his head fast enough. Like his brain would process too quickly and he'd get bored and move on. So it was a matter of like breaking it down and giving them this like missing piece of, okay, just memorize your times table, instead of like, how are you multiplying? Yeah. When you multiply, you're actually adding numbers in your head in different patterns.
Who do you think then
patterns, you have more flexibility?
Well, I think it's great. I mean, it's amazing that you've landed on that. I wonder, my fear would be, and not even fear, I guess my fascination is this, because a lot of people have talked about this idea that, well, maybe education is dead in general. I mean, I certainly hear it in the college fields. People talk about the age of the internet, right? We have this idea that, well, you know, you could get an MBA, but you also could learn from a coach who's done it, or learn from, and it doesn't even have to be coaching anymore. It could be any field. I know there are doctors who are, and not teaching you med school stuff, but teaching you how to run a business, for instance, whereas a doctor before might have gone back and got a grad degree in business. Now you could hire a coach that will teach you how to run a practice and run a more perhaps even conscious doctor's office and stuff like that, where so the systems are being broken down. So then you get to school, and I was even making this argument the other day with a bunch of people that, you know, I used to scoff at the trade schools because my education was telling me growing up, well, if you're gonna go to high school to learn a trade, then you're not doing it right. You're supposed to take AP quizzes and go to an Ivy League. And but now I'm looking back and going, in a way, that was a little more conscious. Learning something, you could graduate and all of a sudden you could be a cosmetician and you actually could make money directly. You don't have to go to the system, and perhaps those business skills are transferable. I didn't see the big picture back then. So here's my question for you with all this. What do you think people should actually be learning? Is it math? what if there's a kid that very early on wants to be, is moving towards being an artist, or has an interest in some sort of trade? I mean, is there a world where this stuff, this curriculum that everybody's decided, math, language, speech, whatever it is completely irrelevant, and we should actually tune into something else to get the most out of humans? What are your thoughts?
So the subjects aren't being taught well, really, because history is something that exists regardless of whether we study it, right? It's there. And if you're not studying it, then you're ignoring and you're neglecting your intellectual side. And it's incredibly valuable to have all of these different subjects. The way that I've personally broken them down has been by the way that they contribute to the way that you consciously see yourself. For example, writing, reading and writing, storytelling, your ability to storytell is founded on your ability to like create a structure around words and figures and thoughts, right?
Absolutely.
So there has to be a structure, and there is a structure, but it's inherent in nature. So when you study nature and you find all of those patterns that exist in nature, which if you think about math and all of those patterns, right? Math is like the root into the intellectual understanding that nature already has the patterns that we're studying, that what we're creating already exists, right? Like we are, that creative factor that you have, that we all have, the ability to create something new. If we want to create an entirely new school system, there has to be a system,
right?
There's going to be something inherent. And so to scrap the past is, I think, a waste. But to break it down and look at the nuance and the subtlety of like, why is math important? Why is history important? Like the concept of these things, and we dive into that, we can rebuild something that is flexible and that's conscious, because art allows you to have emotional and mental and physical and behavioral flexibility, right? And stories allow you to reflect on those things so that you can have an understanding of them intellectually. And the way you have an understanding of them intellectually is because you've studied math and you have a structure that you can work that story within. And then science allows you to see that you just followed a pattern that's possible to follow again and discern something new and something creative from. And that's where, when you've just done is looked at your history and gone, oh, okay, there's something I can learn from history to help me create something that's a full expression of myself. When you get to that point, you have to be willing to accept that you're going to be creating something new from something old, always, always. And so there's always going to be value from the past, but you have to be willing to take that information and shift it into a new way of seeing what we already have.
This is very fascinating. I know initially we were going to talk about quantum, and I'm sort of landing on this education piece just because it's so, it's very intriguing. And I'm curious about, you know, what you imagine might happen with the people who've gone through this. You know, you have the parents that you're working with. Do you think there's a chance that by setting up the parents for success, that then gets transferred to the kids, and then these kids, what would be the reason for them to then seek out a conscious education coach? I mean, do you think you are rewiring and reworking the entire ancestral path so that these kids are now going to be the educators of our future?
I mean, they could become educators, but they could become something else. Whatever it is they choose to be is the point, is for them to have the freedom to do that. So,
or I mean, look here, I guess let me put it this way.
Okay.
If one of the kids of one of these parents grows up and goes, wow, I enjoyed this. This is my mom learned from Aria Willow, and I remember training with her. And now I'm going to have kids and I'm going to send them to public school.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a failure? Have you failed them?
No.
Okay.
So I wouldn't say that because those kids that I'm working with, right? Because I work with them one-on-one as well. They have multiple models. They have me and they have their parents, right? But there's, as those kids are growing up, they're making their own choices about how to discern what is true for them. But when you give them a pattern for internally being able to discern what's true and what's not, it's their choice to apply it. It's their choice to apply that or not. And their parents give them a model to help them encourage them to make a choice that serves them every time, which ultimately serves our collective consciousness. And it's possible. And I think it wouldn't even be a bad thing for a kid to send their child to a public school system because how many years would that be? 20, 30 years, right? By that time, the public education system may be totally different. If it was the way it is now, shoot, that kid would be the best influence on the public school system.
That's a good point.
Right?
You know, when you raise
the
vibration.
Needs to be behind.
Yeah. What would happen if you and Betsy DeVos had a conversation? How would that go?
Oh, I'm not familiar with the name, actually.
Really? The person that that was Trump's education per, I don't even know.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Oh gosh. I don't follow a lot of politics really tightly because Trump has a lot of intense dark energy that I just don't.
I was going to say, there's something about you that's very intriguing, which is that you're talking about very high level stuff here. Do you have to open parents up to that conversation, or are you frequently talking to people that are already well versed in being a little more off the grid? Yeah.
Well, so being a little more off the grid, as you say, which I think is accurate. I think it's something that sometimes surprises people, because I grew up in I grew up in the system, right? I went to the public school system, and like, my dad's an engineer for the state and my mother's a registered nurse, and I was always very well provided for. And so I grew up learning a lot of the language and ways to relate to people who have come from living in the system, right? Living in a house in the country with all the AC and heating and, you know, orchards and stuff. And so it's easier for me to relate to that because I came from there, even though I have this very sort of out there perspective now. It's been a blessing, truly, to have come from where I came from. And that's why I say it's, you know, that child who goes to the public school system after meeting me, totally fine. I came from the public school system and I'm fine.
Yeah.
You know, and
you're the bridge. I mean, I think of myself that way too in this show. It's exposing people that might not normally go into this and sharing these ideas with them. Mm-hmm. But the question then is, you know, are you, from people that learn about you and learn about your work, are you involved in communities where people might be predisposed to that already?
Yes. So I am in some NLP communities. Evolved NLP is actually the program.
Oh, I
went through Avalon Empowerment.
Too.
It's a slightly different approach to NLP. It includes a lot of forgiveness work and some other different modalities. And there's also been a lot of expansion. Ernie Pavan is actually the head of that. He works with Kelly Osmond and Laura Slynn, and they have been the most incredible quantum team that I've worked with. I also just started working with Chad and Holly Ockstad, and they are quantum impact team. And they're helping me get all of this, the group set up so that I can support people on a bigger scale. So I have communities and I have groups that have parents with, you know, kids with special needs or kids who are interested in raising their vibration and learning on a more conscious level. So, I have some mixed groups. So I have kids like that. And then I've got other kids who are like coming from the public school system, and they're like, last year was a nightmare. I just want to get off the ground and restart, because public school is not for me anymore. So I have a huge range of people that I work with.
Yes. I did a video I think it was around winter of this year on Facebook. I went live because I wanted to talk about this. There was some editorial about, oh, education's coming back. And there was a lot of stuff about, you know, reopening, going back to this. And I did this Facebook live because I really felt I needed to speak about it. Mm-hmm. This idea that of going back to education, people wanting to go back, I thought we learned throughout this that it wasn't great to begin with.
Yeah.
That was the whole thing. And that's what makes me very sad in a way about what's happening. Stuff is opening back up, but the core questions that I thought we were starting to ask about the systems we have in place are just, nope. Oh, we're going to go back into the classroom. I don't even know. I mean, have you thought about how to continue that kind of dialogue with people in a more impactful way? Because it seems like people just kind of do what people tell them to do and don't really question enough to take action on dismantling the structures.
Yeah, and I think that the reason, you know, a big part of the reason for that has to do with that that unconscious side, that work that I'm doing with the unconscious, is that, you know, when you have the public school system shut down the way it is, and you have families that are dealing already with a ton of stress. They're already dealing with a ton of stress in their life, and then all of a sudden they're working at home and their kid's there, and they're trying to like monitor and recognize that their kid is struggling while also focus on their work. Sometimes that can get really overwhelming. And if your focus is on, I need to be grounded, I need to be at home, I need to get my work done so that I can make enough money to support my home and my family so that we can have food, so that we can have a house, so that we can have air conditioning, like all of those things, if your focus is purely on that and you're not focused on what's going on with your kid and you go, this is distracting and they were doing better in school before because I was able to provide all these things for them, then you're going to send them back to the public school system.
Yes.
Because it's because you see that as the most grounding route necessary for you to be able to do your work, get your things done, and support your family on the most basic level. So I totally get it. I totally get if you're in that survival mode and you're like, I have to do the things, all the really basic necessary things. I can understand why we would miss out on, oh, right, there's an emotional aspect and a component of like, my child is learning from what I'm doing and where I'm sending them. And they've had that opportunity. So some parents have had the opportunity to see their kid there and they've taken it and they've gone, wow, this is much different. And I have an opportunity to make this much easier and much better, but I don't have a structure for it. I can tell that sending them back to public school won't give them something, or it, that they've been missing something there that I know I can give better, but I don't have a structure for it. Those are my people. Those are my parents who I'm like, I got you. I've been working in school, in the system and outside the system because it didn't work for me either.
Yeah.
So I totally get it why parents would send their kids back, because it's hard to conceive of solutions that unless you can see the ultimately detrimental effects that it will have, unless you've experienced them yourself, or you've seen them in someone you love, it's hard to accept that it's ultimately not going to serve you or your kids.
What are some of the, you've mentioned some of them already, some of the signs that something's missing. You've heard kids say, look at it, we don't feel like we're learning anything. You've mentioned emotional reactions, sort of just getting upset for no reason. What are some of the other telltale signs that would make a parent go, yeah, I think something's wrong with this school system?
So a lot of kids are sitting on one or the other of this fence. They're either really acting out and they're not doing their homework, or they're fighting you on their homework, or they're bullying other kids. You know, you're getting calls from the school and kids in trouble, or they've done some other thing again. A lot of that kind of stuff. Also, you've got kids who are isolating themselves, kids who are being bullied, kids who are not saying anything to you. They're spending their time in their room alone. Maybe they're on their phone all the time, but there's no emotional conversation going on. And you can tell when your kid is like flat energy, right? When they're like not interested in life, they're moving really sluggish. Maybe they're immersing themselves in art a lot. Sometimes kids will find their own way to cope with it. So art is a really healthy outlet, but it's also, it's having a structure in how to create that art and process those emotions in a place where you know you're going to be understood. Really, really helpful for those kids.
So that's a
big part of my art classes, is having kids, because kids, they will create to the nth degree. They don't need me to teach them how to create. It's how to create with a structure so that they can grow with what they want to create. So kids who want to do anime drawing, I'm like, yeah, let's go learn anime drawing. Like, let's look at the curve in this line. How does that affect the way that they are saying, yes, please? Or like, oh, I'm too shy. Like, it has an emotion that comes with those things. And the more you give them structures to create, the more they can apply those things, because they get confidence from being able to make what they wanted to make. And then when they go to do something hard like math, they can make what they want to make, because they've already done it in art and they know they can, because they've had a teacher who supported them in that, who can also support them in math.
Yes. This is definitely resonating with me. Yeah. No, I mean, it's I guess you could call it transferable consciousness in a way. People talk about skills, but transferring the way you think about one thing to another thing is, it's often not talked about enough. I appreciate that you're really delving in it. Here's my question. How early is too early to teach kids about quantum?
About quantum?
Yeah. Do you ever talk to kids about it? Quantum theory,
I mean,
or
I, spirituality? I do, actually.
Really? I'm curious about that.
Well, so the thing is that a lot of what happens when you go to teach kids something, especially something that you've never taught them before, like I haven't really talked a ton about quantum to kids. But the thing about something new like that is that you have a framework. If you have a framework for understanding it, really, really understanding it, and a kid's ask you a question, right? A lot of times something will come up and I'll have a framework for quantum something. So I'll say something like, oh, well, that was just from quantum space. Just came in from the ether. And they'll be like, what does that mean? And I'll be like, oh, you know. And I think of like, well, what would fit within their model of the world to understand? I'll be like, well, you know how thoughts just kind of come in randomly, and then they'll have a thought that's random, and they'll be like, yeah, because they just had a random thought. And I'll be like, it's like that. It just comes from somewhere. And it sort of, it dispels this thing, but then they ask you a million more questions about, well, okay, where is somewhere? How do you access it? And I say, okay, well, think about, I'll say like, don't think about a pink elephant. And of course they're thinking about pink elephants. So then I say, okay, tell me about your pink elephant. And they go, oh, how do you know? And I was like, well, like, and then we can talk about that. So you just play, you know, you do little tricks with them, and they kind of, mind tricks will get them more interested, because that's something that's more abstract.
Yes. Right?
And then it opens up their creative mind. And then when they get to art class, they're just like, well, I'm gonna draw a pink elephant. And then they start drawing it, and they're like, well, maybe it looks like this. Maybe it looks like that. Because all of a sudden they're now finding value in the random thoughts that come in.
Yeah. Now this is very cool. I wonder if one question that public school teachers could ask themselves is, how curious are your students about the subject you're teaching? Because that's kind of the framework I keep hearing over and over.
Yes.
You are teaching and really expanding the sense of curiosity, which, I mean, I am just, that is all I do. That's all the show is. That is all I'm living for. That's all that is kind of, it's my highest value, is the ability to follow curiosity. You know, why isn't it happening more? Why did I go to a public school and it seemed that everybody was just going through the rote routine, and if you were curious, you were maybe labeled a nerd, or it was off topic, your curiosity? I mean, what is this active suppression of answering questions? And I realize this could veer into controversial territory, but I am curious. I am curious about where you think it might be coming from, and what is stopping that at such a young age.
So if you think back to like education and what it was for, when we first came, let's go back to like when we first came to America, right? We were all like pilgrims and stuff. We're all living, we're all farmers, right? For the most part. And your kids have to learn the skills of the trade so that they can do the trade so that you can eat. Like, it's a very basic need.
Yes.
Right? It's a necessity. You have to have the skills to do the practice to move, to live, right? And so the only thing that was required was the skills, right? Because you learned all the other things from home. But the more that we went, oh, these skills are valuable, and the more that we expanded our skill sets, the more that we went, oh, there's all these different skill sets that you have to study. Let's look at this one and that one and this one. And then it becomes focused on the facts so that you can become a worker to perpetuate the system that supports the people.
Yeah.
Right? But it's rote. It's rote, and we forget that someone had to create the structure for that farmer in the first place to do the thing in the field, right? And so occasionally you get kids who are like in that space, and we still have the creative arts, right? And so they use their creativity, and you'll have an idea. But it's like, whenever you think about kids who have like an idea,
or like adults who have an idea, you think of it as like, oh, wow, like that's rare. Like he had a brilliant idea. Why does that not happen more often? You should be having a brilliant idea every day.
Yes.
Like a ton of them. Like how much are you tapping into your creativity if a brilliant idea hits you and you're also, you don't even know how to execute it? How often does that happen?
Yeah.
Right? You don't even have the wherewithal to figure out, well, how would that even be possible? We haven't stretched our creative minds enough to figure out, well, what am I, how do I work within that frame? So like our system was set up to put in people who could perpetuate the basic necessities of our life, but not to perpetuate creative solutions to the problems we have. And that's a problem, which is why we have so few creative solutions to our American education system. Because, you know, teachers are going through a system that's built to perpetuate a system.
Oh my gosh. I feel so you've spoken to my constrictions that I feel about the various systems that I am a part of and feel that I might continue to be a part of just because, and I see it. I get it. I think there is I think consciousness is changing in culture. I think people are more aware of, in all socio-political things, in to a certain extent in schools, though clearly not enough, and definitely in corporate culture. I mean, I think there is a concerted effort to say, no, we really do value work-life balance. We really do. Here's another seminar about this. Here's a mental health person. Here, I get it.
Yeah.
But I also see where the limitations are too. It's tricky because it's still trying to make the best of a system that really needs to be rebuilt from the bottom up. I mean, look, Aria, not that I'm gonna ask you for the answer to how you would do that, but I do want to know, is there a way right now? How would you right now with what we're dealing with, short of, you know, lighting everything on fire and returning to the forest, which might be the solution. What would you do right now to change the game when it comes to escaping the system in a practical way?
You know, to be perfectly honest, one of the most important things that I've learned is to practice what you preach. And I absolutely believe that a lot of the structures and systems that we've built that we take for granted, power, electricity, automobiles, travel, all of these really basic things, I think will ultimately break down if we don't create structures within our own personal daily lives that support us without having to rely on someone else. So one of the things that I'm deeply committed to pursuing for my own life is homesteading. I want to have a place that has my own power, my own water and own electricity sources, and, you know, build a geodome and farm my own stuff. But the thing is that it is impossible to do that alone. It's just not possible. Even going as off-grid as I can, it's not possible. We need one another. And that's why I stay connected with all of the people that I know and love, is because as much as I want this world to be changed and different, I can't do it alone, right? I'm not the one doing everything in the planet. It's a collective effort. We are a part of a collective consciousness, right? So with what you know of quantum physics, about how all of us are entangled with one another, and not just humans, but plants and animals and the planet, and all of the planets in our solar system are all connected in this intricate dance and this intricate balance. And for you to step away from the system is to say that a system doesn't exist or isn't important. So I'm going to step back from the system as much as I can so that I can have a more objective view of how I would go about my daily life to fix it, and then share that with those who are interested and who want to do the same thing. So when I raise my vibration and my consciousness, and I keep the people in my circle who are doing the same thing, they end up wanting this information. And if I'm living my life that way, I have it for them.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want this information, you have to check out Aria Willow. We'll put a link. You can connect with her on Facebook if she's still on the grid by the time this episode comes out. We have no idea. That's what I'm concerned about, actually. With your parents, do they? You mentioned your parents are, quote unquote, more mainstream, i.e., they're engaged in the sector that is public and part of the world. They're on grid. We'll just say your parents are on grid.
They're a little more built into the system. Yeah.
They're into grid, but do they? How are they taking this evolution for yourself? Do they understand it? Do you what is going on with them and your evolution?
I think that's a fascinating question, because it's been light speed jumps for me, growing from living in that kind of a culture to living where I'm at now. It's been, I think, difficult for my parents to understand where I'm coming from, but both of them have made a very strong and concerted effort to speak with me, to support me, to discover what it is that I'm trying to change and how and why. And, they're my parents. They're a part of me physically as much as I am a part of them. And regardless of whether they live on grid or off grid, I absolutely love them and support them and believe and hope that they do for me too.
Yeah. I was going to say, with your consciousness, the way you look at consciousness, I mean, yeah, mm-hmm. they're a part of you. You're a part of them. Isn't there, do you ever think that there might be a part of them that is going, yeah, you know what? I've felt this way too. And our daughter is doing things that she's just taking actions on things that we haven't. She's evolving past us. I mean, have you ever sensed that there is a little bit of off-gridness in your mother and father?
Well, you definitely hit an emotion there. I think, yeah, definitely. I grew up in El Dorado Hills in like a more suburban area, and we ended up moving when I was pretty young, I think around 8 or something like that, 8 or 9, to 2 acres of land. And we had a horse and goats and sheep, and my mom gardens and my dad does a ton of housework. They're very homesteading kind of people already, even though their jobs are very like corporate and stuff. And so I feel like I sit somewhere in the middle there and have expanded on something that I don't know if they dreamed about this, but I know that my mom has wanted horses and wanted property forever, but it's a lot to maintain. And it's something that I feel like that love got passed down to me. So I definitely feel like there's a part of them that resonates with this.
Yeah. Of course. No, I as somebody that is so between both worlds, I feel the same way, Aria. I know my family definitely comes from a more traditional background. I know that there are traditional values, but I also know that there is always been a support and encouragement to say, you know what, do what makes you happy.
Yeah.
And I think that that is, you are living that. And I also think what's even more significant is that already you are working with the next generation and telling them that it's okay to follow that too.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, what's the point of being a kid if not to be told that it's okay to be a kid? I mean, yeah. That's where you learn the most about who you are as an individual, really. Or at least it can be a really beautiful, wonderful, safe opportunity for you to learn so much about who you are and the kind of resilience that you have. Playing sports gave me so much exercise in personal discipline and like teamwork, leadership, and personal growth, and like valuing those things. They've been a foundational support for me, having practiced those for so many years. And so the things that you do as a kid, they translate through the rest of your life. And the more that you go forward, the more you should look back and see, where have I come from? Where is this coming from? And how long have I been perpetuating this pattern that's not serving me?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That is, I was going to ask you what is, I usually like to end with sort of, what is the one thing right now you would tell parents if they wanted to become more conscious, to do? But I mean, I almost wonder if it's that. Is it looking at where you've come from? And yeah, I mean, does anybody, how would you put it? Because you did just put that so well. If a parent is listening to this, is there anything they could do right now so that they become a more conscious educator for their child?
I think that so many parents are afraid that their child is going to pass on, or that they're going to pass on the things that they've done, or that their parents have done, or their grandparents have done, that that they're like, oh gosh, it's the thing that comes to mind right now. That thing that you're like, oh my gosh, my kid's going to do that, or my kid's going to be like that, and it's because of
Yes.
me. That feeling, that's the thing that you should be looking at and discovering, why do I feel that way? And spend time with yourself on that. Because when you look at yourself, whatever your kid's age is, 90% of you is unconscious. So when you actually dive in and look what's going on with the part of me that I'm not really paying attention to most of the time, when you dive into that, you're going to do your kids the best service, because when you pay attention to yourself the most, you'll notice your kids so much more. You say, what am I passing on? What am I not? And you can see it reflected in them. You know your kid. You can see it reflected in them, and you know what it is. So once you dig into that, find support so that you can clear it. And if you don't need support, if you've got that, if you've got a family, go for it. Cool. You dive in and you figure out what is it that I'm doing that I'm passing on that I don't want to pass on anymore. And that will serve your family the best, because your kids pick up on that stuff. Kids are sponges. They soak up everything. We all know this. So the more
Yeah.
that you do work for yourself, the more that it will pass on to them. And then you can just do your day-to-day work of however it is that you educate them, whatever that looks like. But you do your internal work first, and you make sure you're just present, so that when they have those behaviors, you can objectively go, okay, how am I showing up so that I can support them best? And if I don't know a pattern, I'm gonna go find one.
Yes. Wow. Everybody, if you do not have that support yet, highly recommend checking out Aria Willow. She does one-on-one transformation coaching services for homeschooling moms. She even by the time this episode might be out, there she I know you're working on a group coaching program. So
Yes.
we if that is out by the time we do this, either way, I will all the notes will contain Aria's contact info so you can reach out to her. Yeah, this has been such an enlightening conversation. I really Yeah, I appreciate you going deep with this, and I was just so curious about this curiosity that you're installing in our youth. So I really appreciate you taking me on that intellectual ride and the heart ride too. I feel like my heart and consciousness expanded as well. So
All
thank you so much
good.
for coming on, really.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having me. This has been absolutely amazing, and I have learned a lot too about about how to speak about this. I think sometimes it can be really difficult to talk about quantum in relation to education, but this has been beautiful and lovely. So thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, Aria. Absolutely. Thank you, Aria Willow. Did you learn something? You better have. Oh God, she's a conscious education coach if you didn't. Hey. Maybe I've learned more from doing these podcasts than I did my entire early upbringing pre-college. Now that's a thought. Make every kid a podcaster. I think I have an online course idea. Thanks, Rondi McGilvery, for the theme music. Thank you for listening. We'll talk soon, everybody.